Welcome to episode 127 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read The Flash, Terminal Velocity by Mark Waid. And now, the cast begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another speedy episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week, we're starting off our series of episodes about The Flash. And we're kicking it off with Terminal Velocity. It's a trade paperback from 1995, written by Mark Waid. And it collects issues 95 to 100, and also issue number 0. But I pulled my comics out of my long box, because I actually had these singles. So I didn't read number 0. Did either of you?
I did not. I forgot that it was part of it. So
perfect. They wouldn't even have to worry about it.
I only read 95 too. Yeah.
All right.
I had individual issues as well. So.
All right. So what did you guys think of this one? I think this is our first time reading a comic that actually features, let alone a Flash, but like any kind of speedster, right?
Yep.
I think so.
127 issues, and we finally got in a speedster.
Well, Final Crisis kind of had... Didn't Final Crisis have Barry Allen towards the end?
Yeah, he has that thing with the treadmill.
Really, he wasn't really in it, but yeah, so... Yeah.
So what did you guys think of this?
I liked it. I like The Flash. The Flash is one of those characters that I really like, I really wish I had read more of, because my first real experience with The Flash was actually from the Justice League cartoon, the Bruce Timm Justice League.
And so
that's Wally West again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's awesome in that.
There's an episode that focuses on him that's friggin' awesome, where it's like, I don't remember who, somebody like tags along with him as he patrols his own city. And there's a scene where he goes in and into the bar, like Pied Piper just pulled off a crime of some kind. I don't remember the details. And then afterwards, Wally goes and meets him in the bar where all the other rogues are like hanging out and says, "So, have you been taking your medications lately?" And Pied Piper says, "No, man, they make me blah, 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 blah." And he says, "Well, maybe you should take your medications sometime. Do you want to go down with me to the clinic?" Like, the Flash just sits and talks to his enemy.
See, that's another thing too. Is like I've seen that Flash, and then I've read this now, and I've seen Flash in other things, but I've never read anything about his rogues really.
Oh, they're great. We're gonna get to that next week.
They seem so awesome because of things like that, and then they represent like the idea of like a classic supervillain. I mean, Pied Piper. What does he do, Andy? He is exactly that. He controls people with music, right?
Yes.
And then Captain Cold. Come on, those are like the best names. He's, the campiest he's, names, and they're
he's
awesome.
Mr. Freeze, but lamer. Well, depending on who you talk to.
Doesn't Flash have like 3 ice-themed villains?
He has like,
any?
There's Jack Frost, right? Is he a villain?
Yes. Or,
and then Chilblain?
Yeah.
And I think Captain Cold. There's 3 right there.
I think Killer Frost is a sometimes Flash villain too, I think.
Right. Yeah. And Killer Flash is a
Killer Frost.
Killer Frost is a girl too, right?
Yeah. So that's 4.
Man, the Flash. Batman. Everyone says Batman has the best villains, but I don't know. Flash. And they're straight up called the Rogues.
Yeah.
So good.
And then, well, they have like a little congregation. Like they consider themselves like, they're blue collar villains. That's the way they like to think of themselves.
Yeah, aren't they kind of unionized where they have health insurance and stuff?
Yes, they get together and they hang out and they have a union. They call themselves a union, and like you have to like prove yourself to the rogues and all the other kind of things you'd have to do to like a gang of enemies, you know? You have to like prove yourself to them, pull off this heist, you know, actually go out and maybe, you know, beat the Flash. But after that, you're in the union and you get a paycheck. But what's interesting about them is none of them want to kill Wally. None of them want to kill Barry. They don't want to... Well, not none of them, but the majority of them don't have any deep-seated hatred of the Flashes. They just want to beat them. They think it's a fun game, and if they get rich robbing a bank while they do it, then that's awesome.
See, that's awesome. But maybe we should save the Rogues talk for next week when we read Rogue War. But
yeah, because in this one we do get one of Flash's more serious. He has a couple serious villains, Professor Zoom being one, Gorilla Grodd being one, Cobra being one. We get here. Wow, you know, I typed up all my notes, and I didn't mention Cobra once. Was Cobra not a compelling villain for you guys either? I'm assuming it wasn't compelling for me.
He was just a catalyst for the rest of the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he was kind of, he was a means to an end. You know what I mean? Like, beating Cobra wasn't the point of this comic.
Yeah.
The point of the comic was to figure out what was wrong with Barry. Or, not Barry, with Wally.
His Cobra's motives just seemed really... I mean, like, it's common to say, like, a villain wants power, and that's acceptable. But his whole thing of, like, I'm going to use a giant earthquake to power armies through electric brain control to destroy the nation so that I can have it. I hate it anytime someone says, I'm going to kill everyone so I can rule them all. And it's like, no, dude, you're going to have nothing left to rule.
You're going to have a bunch of dead bodies.
That is the worst villain plot ever. So, I don't know, like, that actually characterizes this comic for me. I wanted to like it so much, and there were parts that I thought were really good, but I think it was also muddied by some very, like, 90s comic problems that I think we'll probably get into later, but, like, bad villain plans is one of them.
Yeah, I think part of that is what David said as well. I mean, the villain here is Cobra, but that's not really what we're fighting against. We're not fighting against Cobra, we're fighting against a barrier of the Speed Force, which is just so amorphous, like, it's hard to get a grasp on that as your quote-unquote villain or enemy here, you know? It's just kind of Barry competing against his own ability to make it in time.
Hey, so...
Wally, Jesus.
I was just going to say, like, in which case, either remove the villain being such a major part of the plot, or at least give him, like, some slightly better motivation, and then he can hang out in the background as the catalyst for everything.
Well, I think that they needed to give Wally a reason to run fast enough to encounter this, run up against this barrier of the Speed Force again.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could have gone about it in a different way, I guess, but I think the Cobra and Linda interaction must have been building in previous issues that we didn't read, so I think that that kind of created a real situation where Linda was in real danger, not like collateral damage because there's an earthquake and then the house is going to fall on her, so Barry has to run super fast to save her. You know, I agree with you on some levels, Jen, but I kind of see why I can forgive this a little bit.
And it's a difficult balance to strike, because if you make the villain more compelling than Cobra is here, then the villain gets more focus in the reader's mind than this concept of Barry trying to have fidelity to his relationship with his wife and to the Speed Force and to the legacy of the Flash. Like, he's torn between these things, and that's the thing that's antagonizing him here, is the way that he's torn between these factors in his life and his knowledge of what's going to happen. That's what's antagonizing him, not Cobra. Cobra's just the annoyance. And if you change Cobra into, like, somebody more menacing, like Professor Zoom or Gorilla Grodd, then all of a sudden we get, oh, shit. We get the villain actually coming up more in your mind. But you're not wrong. Except I will say I'm glad it's Cobra, because that means that Linda Park got to be a total badass. Cut to strap on two fucking giant ass energy guns and shoot motherfucking Cobra troopers.
Hey, so can we go back a second? Andy, can you fill us in a little bit more on the Speed Force? So is this the first this isn't the first time it's come up, is it?
I don't know.
I was trying to figure that out, and it's hard to find, like, the first appearance of the Speed Force, you know?
I don't know if this is the first time they've ever called it, quote-unquote, the Speed Force, but I know this isn't the first time they've mentioned tapping into the power of speed, you know, or tapping into this, that, or the other thing. Because they had to have some reason why the two accidents with Wally and Barry both produced the same result, you know? And it's, you know, chemicals on a wall, lightning, accident, fastest man alive, you know? Like, there is a piece missing in that equation. And that piece is kind of, well, okay, but what did that actually make them change into? Because that accident getting replicated is just too random, you know?
Yeah.
So they've talked about it that kind of way before, how their accidents have caused them in different ways to tap into the same well of energy or same well of power. But I don't think it was ever called the Speed Force, or there was a Speed Force barrier or anything like this until Terminal Velocity. Which gets even more complicated when you talk about the Quicks, Johnny and Jesse, with them with their equation.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm a big fan of the Flash comics. I own a shit ton of the individual issues. I think Flash is a good balance of serious and corny and fun and all that kind of great stuff. But it does get really convoluted trying to draw the family tree of all the Flashes. With Bart, Barry, Wally, Johnny, Jesse, Max. Is that all of them? I'm sure I'm missing one or two. There's another one in the far future, not Bart. I don't know.
There's probably a Legion character named, like, Running Fast Boy or something.
Running Fast, that'd be exactly it. So, with all these legacy characters in here, did it ever get... I mean, I know all these characters, but did it ever get confusing, or did you ever get, like... Was the legacy of this group of heroes a barrier to entry for this kind of comic?
For me personally, it was not really... It wasn't distracting, I guess. Like, I was fine with it, but...
Yeah, I felt like everything was actually really well explained naturally within the comic. I mean, when he's doing his narration, he says, "I'm Wally West, I'm the fastest man alive." And he's kind of like just saying what he's seeing in front of him. And he goes, "That's Linda. She's, I think, his aunt, right?"
No, Linda's his girlfriend.
Oh, sorry, not Linda. Iris.
Yeah,
Iris is his aunt.
It's like, that's Iris, my aunt. That's Linda, my girlfriend. That's Bart, my... I don't even know what that would be. but it made sense in the context, even if it's hard to remember, and it was never confusing who was whom.
Okay. Yeah, Bart is Iris's, I think, great-great-great-grandchild or something like that.
So I guess that Wally and Bart are, like, cousins, kind of?
Yes, they are related.
Because Bart calls Barry Uncle Barry in a couple parts in here. Right?
Yes.
I believe so. And then Jay is not related to them. He's just...
No, Jay's not related at all. But Jay might as well be related. I like that he was there for their holiday party.
I love Jay's costume.
Right? The helmet, the fucking hat.
It's awesome.
It screams old school in a classic way. And yeah, not in an UGG way.
It's like an awesome Golden Age costume that really, like, stands up. It, like, endures, I think.
Well, I mean, I think there's a really good reason that Jay Garrick has survived this long from, you know, the Golden Age of comics to today. He's just, out of those characters, he's really well designed, and he's appealing.
Yeah, and it's important, especially if you're going to have a group of heroes like this, where they're bound by their powers and by blood a little bit. And if Wally's sort of the father figure of this family, then it makes sense that you would have a grandfather figure. Because if we're following Wally's story and Wally gets lost and Wally wants to look to somebody who's more experienced, then he has to have somebody to turn to. And the Flashes are such a unique subset. You need Jay there for that role. I guess he turns almost as much to Max in this comic as he does to Jay.
Yeah. I thought Max was really cool.
Yeah, I did too. Like, you know, my first introduction to Max was a HeroClix figure, and I was like, "Who is this guy?" And now I think I really like him. Sorry, Jen, I totally like interrupted you there.
No, that was all I had to say about him, really.
Well, so what did you guys think of these characters? What did you guys think of, like, Wally and Bart and Linda?
The strong point of this comic is that every single character, except, you know, like, the really shallow villains, are inherently likable. Even Bart, I mean, okay, so I think this was a fumble in the writing, where he is such a little, like, awful kid a lot of the time, but at the same time, like, you know, there's a background there where Wally's been unaccepting of him and treats him like a little kid and doesn't respect him, and Bart kind of wants to prove himself, so even he is likable.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like everyone, like the Flash group, they seem like the sort of people you just sit down and have a beer with. You know, like, really chill, really nice, friendly people. And they're just easy to relate to for some reason, even though they're superheroes or, you know, related to superheroes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know, Impulse's character is a little bit weird, because they mention so many times that he's a child who grew up in a virtual reality world. And I think it's supposed to be some kind of commentary on kids in video games these days, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe why he's just like, that's kind of, I think, why we get the bits from Wally, like, oh, well, he doesn't understand consequence. There's no idea about danger, because it's all about, it's a game world to him, you know? I think that's where that commentary comes from, but it also seriously informs a lot of his character. I mean, when I play video games, I get that way too. You know, if I'm playing a video game, there's no consequence. Fuck it. Can I jump down this cliff? Like, if I jump down this cliff, is there something at the bottom, or do I just die? Oh, okay. I die. Okay, I'll respawn.
But that's the frustrating thing about Bart. Like, of course you do that in VR, but he's come to the real world, and it's not like he doesn't know that. I mean, the character is clearly not stupid. And yeah. I mean, at some point you'd kind of internalize as a person in the real world, like, hey, you know, things can hurt me. That's part of growing up. And maybe if you never have that, it's different. But at least, like, on a higher level of thinking, you should know I can get hurt. And he acts like that's not the case. Like, it never even occurred to him. And that doesn't make sense to me, because he's not dumb.
Yeah. I just think the way I think of it is that in the reality that's created in his, that he's grown up in, that sense of danger doesn't exist, right? Like, the situation where he could walk in front of a turbine that he would get sucked in and then ripped to shred, that situation has never existed before him in his life. Like, imagine if like there was a 5-year-old kid, right, who grew up in this house that never had any wall sockets anywhere. So this kid has no concept of what a wall socket is. He's never been told not to stick things into wall sockets. He has no idea. And then he goes over to another house for the first time in his life, sees a wall socket. Look at that hole. I wonder what happens if I stick something in there. Like, the kid has a sense of danger, sure. He has a sense of self-preservation, but at the same time, it's like, this thing I've never seen. I have no idea what it does. I have no clue what its function is. Like, there's that just complete lack of knowledge that might write it off. And I think we kind of get a hint of, he might know it on the higher level, but on the day-to-day functioning level, he probably forgets it. Like, we get that scene with him and Jesse where he's like, oh, this is what real trees and flowers feel like. We get that little scene that it's kind of throwaway, but you get that little bit where he's like, oh, shit, this is real life. And I think it's interesting that we don't get that scene until after he's been kicked in the ass by Wally.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point. I just kind of feel like, I mean, I've known kids who have never really been exposed to dangerous things. And then, I've seen, like, a child charge headfirst at a barbed wire fence, not really knowing
that
would hurt. But at the same time, I think even, without too many negative experiences. When you grow up a bit more, you have, like, situational awareness that makes you think, hey, you know, like, there's a thing there, don't touch it or whatever. And it just strikes me as odd, because it doesn't seem to me like, even if you didn't have a bunch of negative experiences, you wouldn't recognize this. But I think the whole point of him being that way isn't so much, you know, because it's realistic, but it's more to prove a point. Like, this kid is impulsive, and here's our reason for him being that way. And it's so that he can have that conflict with Wally.
Yeah, it drives their interaction between each other. But I like that Wally doesn't give up on him either.
Yeah.
I like that he gets so frustrated. And of course we get the cliche statement like, oh, he's just like you were when you were young. That's why you're so frustrated by him. And I mean, it's interesting because when Wally was younger, Wally was Kid Flash under Barry Allen's tutelage. And so when he brings up Impulse being a sidekick and they talk about a name, Impulse is like, what do you want to fucking call myself Kid Flash? It's fucking lame. But it's funny because I don't think Impulse knows that that's who Wally was. I don't think he knows that history. Or if he does, I don't know. Maybe that's even just another fuck you old man.
Yeah, he's kind of mean to Wally. I mean, Wally's not the best to him, but... like, I don't know. I found Bart to be just kind of a douche for no reason in some places, and that was frustrating.
He gets there. Not like later. In this comic, I think he gets there a little bit. He's still douchey at the end. He's still like, fuck you, old man, for being mean to me. And maybe subconsciously in the back of his mind, but you were right. fuck you, old man, but you were right.
I think he's one of the teen stereotypes that you get in all kinds of writing, you know? He's just the one that thinks he knows better than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, that conflict does pave the way for that excellent bit from Max Mercury, where he's like, he uses a train metaphor.
Right? Oh, yeah. Fuck, what was the metaphor? It was great.
Because it was like, Bart runs you over. Have you thought about, was it diverting the tracks or something? Or, oh, it's being mad at the train for hitting you. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really good teaching moment.
Max Mercury is so cool. He's just like this speedster shaman.
Yeah, his origin story was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fucking sick.
It was so good, and there was, like, no hint that it was him until, like, the other characters were like, oh, wait, you're talking about yourself. And I was, like, mind blown. Like, I was like, that's crazy cool, because like all every time that Barry or that Wally describes him leading up to this, he's like the mysterious Zen master of speed, and it's like nobody knows who this guy is, but he knows all about being a speedster. And then you're like, holy shit, he's like the original speedster,
kinda. And he's been a speedster for a long time, and he's tapped to it. He's also tapped into it in a much more natural way than any of these other characters are.
Yeah.
Like, he's given this gift through some natural Native American shamanistic ritual, as opposed to forensic laboratory accident with chemicals.
Yeah, didn't Barry get, like, he was in the lab and then he got struck by lightning?
Yeah, while standing next to a cabinet of chemicals, and they all exploded and poof, fastest man alive. And that's it. Just poof. Step one, step two, step three, profit.
I mean, that's not the worst origin story ever.
No, but I mean, it's way more badass when, like, the spirits of lightning and wind bestow power upon you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking or being sick. Really good at math, in the case of Johnny Quick.
Yeah. Although, I love how what they actually show you of the speedster formula is, like, some basic trigonometry or something.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's actually Johnny Quick, and I think you get a bit of it here. He has a huge anger problem. He's very pissed at the Flashes because they got it by a freak accident, and he wanted it for so long, and he had to work so hard, and he's still not as fast as they are. And, like, trying to come up with this formula, like, ruined his life. And he's just fucking angry and pissed all the time.
Really?
Yeah, he's actually a pretty interesting character, which makes Jesse Quick super interesting, too. Jesse Quick is one of my favorite characters in the Flash universe, and she also hops over to JSA later, too, and I love her there as well. She's amazing. Ooh. When she grows up a bit.
Let's talk about her for a second, because I just want to point out, she was a really good foil to Bart. In that when she was told, like, haha, you're not really the next Flash, she handled that really well.
Yeah.
Like, so is that, I mean, you've obviously read a lot more of her. Is that kind of what her character is? She's this really cool, calm, collected speedster?
Yes, because, well, aside from being super fast, she also is, she has flight and strength and some other random powers. Her mother was the original Liberty Bell.
Oh,
which, okay. If you know who that is, was like, I don't want to say Uncle Sam's sidekick, but from that same kind of like Freedom Comics line where, you know, like, mm-hmm. we're powered by the spirit of the nation, so I can have the most ambiguous power set ever. And this is like that woman's daughter, so new power, why not? But she's pretty cool. I like her quite a bit. And yeah, she's very much that kind of character. Who is calm and collected, but also not afraid to be assertive and stand up for herself in situations. Like, when she found out that that's what Wally did, her first reaction was like, that's fucking mean and manipulative, man. Like, not just to him, but to me. Like, what the hell? And then, after pointing that out, she also just moved on because you can't change that. Like, just pointed out that was mean and fucked up. All right, now let's save people.
So, that actually provides a really good segue into something I wanted to talk about in terms of plot and writing. And it's his crazy manipulation of everyone around him. And the fact that we see this so often in comics where someone says, I'm not going to tell you the whole truth, even though it might actually help you, in order to protect you. And did this just seem like insanely overboard? His secret keeping and his not wanting to tell people. Like, I saw a future in which Linda died.
See, like, not telling Linda, I can understand up until it's revealed that the whole reason, like, I can understand up until it was her dying and not him, you know? Because mm-hmm. I think for the first 5 issues, we think it's just because he wants to avoid his own death and wants to protect Linda from that fact. Like, that makes perfect sense. But then when you say, I want to protect Linda from her own death, so I'm not going to tell her what's happening, so she doesn't know why I'm telling her to leave. Like, that's exactly what you're not supposed to do when your wife is this incredibly intelligent, savvy woman. Like, you could tell her, Cobra's going to kill you. It will help me settle my mind if you're, you know, in another state. When that happens.
And the worst part is, his approach isn't even like, I won't tell her, so maybe she won't investigate. He says, I expressly forbid you from going and investigating Cobra. And it's like, well, she's clearly headstrong, and she is, you know, she embodies kind of like the spirit of what journalism is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. She's gonna go investigate, you idiot. Go tell her, and maybe she won't. You know, it's like, he just lies and manipulates, and I guess my frustration with that is that it almost turns the comic into, like, a little morality play about, you know, don't lie to your friends.
Yeah, it makes it, that theme gets laid on real thick if you look at it that way.
And I think that that's something that comes up in comics a lot, like, especially in books where it's a single hero title, but there's lots of supporting characters where they kind of go at it alone. And it's like, oh, I should have just asked for help all along kind of thing. You know, he has that moment where he hits rock bottom and then he's like, oh, wait, I should have asked for help. I'm sorry, friends. And that's what happens here. So.
Yeah, and it sucks that even... It's lying to the reader, too, which I think is the frustrating part. Because he keeps saying that he's holding something back. And while we want to know what it is, we get these little scenes in between where he confesses more than he wants to. Like when he walks into Max Mercury's house and Linda happens to be there. And he says something, turns the corner and sees Linda and realizes he said something. Like it's when he confesses that he didn't tell her all of the truth. You know? And it's like when you get that scene, there's a feeling of fidelity between the reader and the author. Like, okay, the truth came out. She's discovered it. They'll work through it. And now everybody knows. Except at like the end of that scene, he says, but not everything. And it's like, oh, why do you do this?
And he does it multiple times. Remember, like even at the part where he says something like, I love you forever. And no matter what happens, know I'll be here with you. And he gives her the ring. He says, and then I tell her everything, and there's just this tiny text box afterwards that says, almost.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you idiot, just tell her.
Tell her, or tell Bart, or tell Max, or tell somebody, so that the reader can know, too.
I mean,
like, it would make such good irony if we knew, and Bart, and if we knew, and Wally and Bart knew, but nobody else knew. Like, we could get those moments.
I think you can kind of guess it, because when he started acting really sketch around her, I kind of assumed that was what was happening. But, I mean, it even takes him about, what, 4 issues to tell Max? Maybe 5 out of, what, 6? So, I don't know. I think that there could have been the emotional weight of all these other things. Like, he's becoming one with the Speed Force, and he has to sacrifice himself to save Linda, and like all these wonderful, deep, sad things, but we didn't necessarily need this kind of like psychotic level of secret keeping.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It makes sense for an issue or two, but when it gets to be 5 issues, it's like, come on, you're in the thick of the shit. You can tell somebody. You can tell Bart. You can tell Jesse. You can tell Jay. You can tell Max. You can tell fucking somebody. Don't tell Johnny, because that guy's fucking crazy. But you could tell almost anybody else. But no. So, the other thing that kind of... There's 2 other things that kind of got me about this comic. And one is that there's a big theme of legacy in here. And there's a big thing of legacy in the Flashes overall, right? It's one of the few, like, titles of a hero that's passed on to, I think, like, 2 or 3 generations, maybe even 4. Like, what was there? I think Bart officially becomes Flash a little while later. Wally, Barry, and Jesse is also Flash. Like, there's 4, and Jay, there's, like, 5 Flashes. Like, it's a mantle that successfully gets handed down. And so there's this big theme of legacy in the Flashes, and it's here, too. But I think there's almost a little bit of criticism in it. Because, like, there's the frame when Wally, quote-unquote, dies, and then literally 2 frames later, they're saying who the next Flash should be. Like, all the speedsters are gathered around talking about, well, obviously it was you, Bart. You were the one who should have been added in the mantle, and you only really get... Like, you guys are seriously talking about this already? The fight's not even over. What does it matter right now?
Yeah, it's... I think part of it is that if there's always a Flash, it's that they're never really defeated. But at the same time, it's like, it gets absurd.
And I think it's supposed to be a commentary, because there's a scene where Linda does comment on it. I don't remember exactly what she says, though. It's something about how... It's when Wally comes back, even. And I think they're over there talking, and Linda's like, we should go tell them that you're back. And Wally tells her, you know, no, this moment's for us. You know, and it's like, around the corner, they're talking about who the next Flash should be. You haven't even been dead for, like, I don't know, an hour or two. And they're already congregating on the matter. I don't know. That came up as an interesting commentary to me.
But that's interesting, because, I mean, if you kind of compare it to other heroes, like, Bruce Wayne is Batman. Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Like, you can't disassociate the costume from the person in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. But here's one where the Flash is the Flash is the Flash. And Wally is Wally, Barry is Barry, Jay is Jay, and there's a separation there. And I think that kind of ties in to what we've seen with the Flash. Like, he's a more laid-back hero. Maybe it's not that he doesn't take his job as seriously, but it's not such a part of his identity that he is, like any of them are not important people without being the Flash instead of just a speedster.
Yeah, I think it's something that's unique to those heroes who don't take themselves incredibly too seriously. Like, the other one that you get is Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
That's another similar thing where, yeah, we're all Green Lantern, except there's five or six of them for Earth and, like, thousands other everywhere else. It's the kind of thing where, yeah, they take their job seriously, but they're not like Batman or Superman.
And it adds more, I guess, solidarity, because you can't have everyone be Bruce Wayne, where he's, like, alone and brooding, and his friends are always trying to work their way in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear that the Flashes have good community, because the first thing we see when Wally comes back is a party, you know, and they're all like, is he going to make it to this party? I hope he, you know, basically, I hope he's alive.
But, yeah.
you know, it's a sense of not having it be a secret, of an identity that's not tied to loneliness. And I think that's a really cool concept for a hero, because they are so often loners. Even, I said Spider-Man earlier, he's a good example, because for a long time he keeps his identity a secret from, like, Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane. And it's hard for him. Whereas you see the Flash kind of be more integrated with his friends.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, he's...
I was going to say, I think part of the reason why you can have such a strong community with the Flash characters is because the speedster power isn't really... I don't know, it doesn't seem that unique. And I feel like saying unique kind of sells it short. But if you think about, like, Superman, for example, he is a man apart from everybody else, right? Because he has his power set's so out there. And even Batman's the same way. Like, Batman is the world's greatest detective, and he's super prepared, and nobody else can be... There's nobody else that's like... It's almost like nobody else can be that, you know, at that level. But anybody can... There's, look how many different ways there are to become a speedster, right? Just in this comic, there's the formula, and Max gets his from the ritual.
Magic.
Yeah. And so... And it's kind of like a fun power, too. Like, the ability to run fast, that's awesome. But, and what's cool is that sets them apart is because of the different ways they got them, but then the different ways they use them creatively. I think here we don't see that too much, but I know in other comics, that Flash, well, we kind of get it here a little bit with trying to teach Bart how to vibrate through things.
Mm-hmm.
All these characters are able to utilize this common power in different ways, and then they kind of share it with each other. So, yeah, I guess I'm agreeing with you guys that it totally is cool that we see this community of speedsters instead of, you know, Superman, the loner, last son of Krypton guy. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's interesting the way that they manifest the different power sets for these kinds of characters. Like, is it not compelling enough to have him just be super fast? Like, does he have to be able to do all of these other things? Like, shift his presence and wavelengths of light and stuff?
I think being super fast is enough of a power, because you can... It's a great power for rescuing people. It's not really an offensive power like super strength or heat vision, you know... We see that a lot here, where they run and pull people out of danger, right? And so, being a speedster is a great defensive power, like generic super speed, because you can just, like, pull people out of danger.
Mm-hmm.
But where it seems like writers really get creative is when they use them in an offensive way. We don't see it here, but I know there's a thing that exists in the Flash continuity called the Mach 1. Or Mach 3 punch or something like that, yeah. Where they use the speed force to punch someone really hard.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, I think it's cool when they creatively use this power, because you can do a lot of things when you're fast, faster than everyone else can see, right?
Yeah, and the speed of light or higher.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous the way that they amp up the guy's speed level over time, but it's something you have to do, I think, to make him compelling. Because yeah. You get other characters like Shazam and Superman, and there's a bunch of guys who do go super fast, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to differentiate this character from them in ways that, like, well, he doesn't just run really fast. He is fast. Like, his everything about him is fast. And they talk about, like, okay, well, he basically has a healing factor because his metabolism runs so high. Like, every cell in his body is running at such a high level so quickly that, like, the way we can naturally heal a bone fracture in, like, a month, he can do in 5 seconds. You know, like, they kind of give him a little bit of a healing factor that way. But it's interesting how they have to do that to keep him compelling over time. So, did we want to talk about the art?
Sure. Sure.
What did you guys think of it?
90s.
Yeah, I didn't think it was particularly outstanding. I actually didn't like the design of Flash when he's, like, too fast. I don't know how to describe it. When he's, like, energy, I didn't like that design.
Mm.
In contrast, though, in Kingdom Come, when the Flash is so fast that he's just energy, that was really cool.
Yes.
Going back a little bit. But yeah, like Jen said, it's not, like, super special art. I feel like we're selling it short because, I mean, it's good, but it's not, like, outstanding, you know?
It's pretty characteristically 90s. I mean, like, I have a note here that says, Linda was Asian? Yeah. And they kind of do the thing where it's like, you can't really tell her race. At least they didn't pull a Jubilee and give her bright yellow skin, so...
Yeah, that would have been offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some scenes where it's good. Like, you get the panel where there's the sort of swath of cloud before the sunset, and it's in the faux thing of the logo that he has on his chest. And there's a couple things that are really done well. Like, that full pager of Linda to open issue 100 is really good. But yeah, overall, it's a difficult thing to draw a guy standing and convey, like, the crackling fast speed that's just kind of emanating from his body, even though he's just standing there. And I think I think it's because in the 90s, this was all just, it's quick, put out once a month. It's all, I think it's real coloring. It's not digital coloring. And like we talk about the Alex Ross, but I get the feeling if he didn't draw part of that by hand, then maybe there's the computer processing at the back end as well, like, to give it that kind of, like, vibrating look. God, that'd be so hard to do in this kind of style of art and in this era. Like, with this kind of coloring and this kind of printing, to do it that way would be really, really tough.
I was just going to say, like, even though the art itself kind of, you know, doesn't necessarily convey the Flash's movement as well as we could want, the pacing frame to frame is done really, really well. Like, for instance, the scene where he's saying goodbye to Linda, mm-hmm. and he's so fast and he's like trying to hold her hand, and then in that last panel he grabs her hand. It's just like heartrending. And that was not just the writing, that was also the art. It was really beautifully done there. So, I mean, I think this is a thing where the artist is actually great, and, you know, the pacing is so good, and it's just 90s, so he's drawing towards the style that the publishers want at the time, with all the muscles and the blurs and the weird design. It's just, I don't know, I feel like kind of it's a product of its time, and that's where any faults really might come from.
It's the difficulty we always run into when we read a 90s comic.
Yeah. Let's see. I had a couple... Well, one major question that I wanted wrapped up before we finish.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe I'm just missing this because I didn't have some continuity in there or something. So the ring that Wally gives Linda, he later pops out of. What's going on there?
They keep their costumes in the ring.
Yes.
The Flash costume is in the ring.
Okay. So, where did he come from?
Maybe he just popped out of the Speed Force the same way he vanished into it. I don't know. I just kind of wrote it off as, hey, Speed Force!
Okay.
Yeah. It seemed... I was like, oh, okay. I mean, that's a thing.
Okay, I thought the ring had something, like, to do with it, and that I was just missing some important bit of, I don't know, continuity or background there. But, oh well.
I think he kind of explains it. Where is he? It's in the part where he... Oh, he says, I was blown free of the explosion. That's what happened. He didn't explode because it pushed him away.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain how he came back from becoming one with God. I don't... Like...
Hey, yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so...
Well, maybe he didn't actually run fast enough to go to the Speed Force. Well, he was all glowy already, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe he was just hot.
Yeah, that's all that friction and kinetic energy. Just...
Yes, exactly.
All right, sounds like we're ready to rate this one.
Yeah.
David, how about you go first?
I'm going to give this one a 3. I enjoyed the comic a lot, but as far as the issues go, it was definitely good, but not like super outstanding. Like I said, this is my first solo Flash story that I've read. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I think I said it like 4 times now. But, yeah, I mean, there wasn't anything, like, crazy about it. I thought it was a good story, and I liked all the characters. I think it was great because it had so many of the Flashes in it. Except for the one that we haven't read yet, which is the one we're going to cover, well, in the last episode in our little Flash series.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the art was good, but it was pretty standard 90s affair. I don't know. Like I said, I just don't have that much stuff to say about it, but I can say for sure that I did not dislike it. So that's why I'm going to give it a 3. It's better than average.
Okay. That's fair. How about you, Jen?
Also a 3, because it is better than average, but it had problems. I kind of feel like this was a real diamond in the rough that if it had been polished, it would have been like, you know, easily 5 level because everything you needed was there. Likeable characters, a compelling emotional story, art that could tell the story well. But then you had all these other things that weren't so good, like Bart having to have the 90s teenager, like, I hate old people trope. It, like, God, I hope we weren't like that in the 90s. Like, he's awful in a lot of ways, even though he's meant to be sympathetic. And despite the fact that I want to sympathize with him, I'm just like, that trope kind of makes him unpleasant. As I said, like, early in the episode, my issue with Cobra kind of just being there. Either leave it out or integrate it. You know, don't have, like, I'm gonna rule the world, like, side story bullcrap. And, I don't know, 90s art. And I really, really wanted to like this because it had, as I said, five characteristics. Like, it could have been five stars. It just had these problems that brought it down to just better than average. So it made me sad in a bad way, in that, like, you know, it's not a five. But also, it did make me sad because the story was good and had an emotional impact. So, give and take.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 3.5. I'm gonna level up a little bit. I agree that Bart's groan-inducing, but I like that in the course of this trade, we see him grow. We see him become a better hero, become a better sidekick, become a better person without letting go of the person that he is. I think a lot of times in comics, we say, oh, look at how this character grew, when really a new author came in and just completely changed the character. And the character didn't grow, they just made a 180. Like, here we actually get to see Bart grow in a way that I think feels organic. Like, if he just was like, oh, Wally was right, I'm going to be totally stand up and listen to everything he says now and follow his orders like as if I were in the military. Like, that wouldn't make sense. Of course he's still going to hate Wally. Wally did a dickish thing. And even though he did a dickish thing for a good reason and it worked, it was still a dick thing to do. And so Bart's still going to be like, fuck you, old man. And he's going to be justified in his hating old people for a while, because that's what the older people did to him. You know, and I like these kinds of things that are hidden in this comic, but they're hidden in here. You know, and there's a lot of great stuff that's not hidden, like all the stuff between Linda and Wally when they're having actual touching scenes between each other. Those are amazingly well done scenes. Like you pointed out, Jen, the scene where they're like holding hands is fucking awesome. Except then there's like the 20 scenes where he's just like lying to her and saying it's okay, when, you know, for 5 of those 20, maybe it's okay, but the other 15, he's just being a fucking idiot. Like, it shouldn't be that these things are the hidden gems. These should just be the gems. But 3.5 is still a pretty damn good rating. I don't know. I'm biased because I already like the Flashes, and I like that we see like early Jesse Quick in this because she's awesome. And maybe we'll get back to more Jesse Quick later, because I really do want you guys to read more of her. I think you'll like her. Well, we need to do JSA.
Yeah, I really want to do a JSA.
Yeah.
I fucking love the JSA. That'd be awesome. Anyway, we're not going to do the JSA next week. Next week, we're going to do more Flash. We're going to do Rogue War, which is going to get into what I think we wanted in this comic, which is good villains. Because the best thing about the Flash is his rogues gallery. So we're getting into that next week. It's a trade paperback from 2006. Collects issues 0.5, whatever that one is, 212, and 218 to 225. It collects that set of issues. I'm going to try and get as many of these as possible. You guys have told me they're all available on Comixology, right?
Yeah, so I was going to try to buy the trade, but on Amazon, you can't get it brand new. There's a bunch of, like, last time I looked, it was just used ones. And so I think what I'm going to do is just get it on Comixology.
Okay. I'll have to look at my long box. I might have the singles for this, too. I'll have to look and check.
If you want to go get the trade, it's volume 7 of the Geoff Johns run.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, it's printed in 2006. So that's okay, what we're going to... Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm looking on Amazon. It looks like you can get it new from some Amazon retailers, but not through Amazon itself, so.
And probably for way more than it's worth.
Well, like, they're about $12, actually.
Okay, that's not bad. Sometimes when they get out of print, they'll go for, like, $60 or something ridiculous new.
No, most of these are about $12, so.
Okay. Okay, not cool. Bad. All right. Well, we've got another Flash comic coming out after that, and then we're even starting to talk about what's coming up, like, a month out. So if you want to know what we have coming up down the pipe, or you want to know more about the issues for next week, you can get all that information by going to our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that. It's got all that information right there. Click on Past Shows. Listen to something from before. But if you click on Past Shows and you see that we've done 127 episodes and none of them are about your favorite comic, write to us and let us know what your favorite comic is so we can cover it. Our email address is...
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or, you know, talk to us over the social media about it. Facebook.com/APSupercast and Twitter.com/APSupercast. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Cool. Until next week, everybody.
Goodbye. Bye.